Hello, my name's Emma and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and one another. The date is Wednesday, the 5th of August, and the time is 4:23 a.m. Can I just ask you for your name, your date of birth and where you've come from?
My name is Anna Maria Reforgiato Recupero. At times you may find the documentation as Anna Maria Giovanna Reforgiato Recupero to make it even easier. I was born in Catania, Sicily, on the 14th of June, 1973. That's actually where I come from. I moved to England back in August, 98. I was supposed to stay for a year, and then here you go. I couldn't leave.
How do you feel now?
Aside, you know, the lack of sleep, I'm okay. I'm just trying to relax because before going up there, that's it really.
How did you hear about the project?
A combination of media, press, different sources really. I knew about, you know, the Fort Blend project in the past, and I found this interpretation, this variation, very, very interesting. First of all, because it's made of people. Second, because in an age probably of mistrust, it just like it's so open and free that I don't know why, but I see it as almost a letter of trust with people. And I like the fact that, each person has its own private slot, but there is discontinuity in the slots, so the fact that it's one another and one another is just very nice.
What made you want to take part yourself?
A bit of a bet with myself, to be honest. I think I would have never, I mean, it's a paradox, I know, but that's how I work. I think I would have never filled in the form to join if I actually knew there was a reasonable likelihood to be here now. So when I filled the form, I was just like, I had, you know, this alibi in me saying, yeah, I mean, go for it, you will never ever gonna be up there. So you could always on the other side say, I tried, I wasn't selected, so it's too bad, it's not my fault. So here you go. People are doing all sorts of different things, either very private and personal or very outspoken, and they're trying to defend their cause or to make their point and things like that. And on my side, I feel a little bit selfish and maybe egocentric, which is not really, you know, the way I normally think of myself. But first of all, I wasn't that prepared because, again, I didn't expect to be called. And number two, I'm trying, you know, to stick to the original reason why I filled in the form, which is fear and terror of being up there. I absolutely hate to be at the center of attention, which I'm told is something very common for narcissist people. Beyond, so this might go against the common idea of that people have of a narcissist, but narcissists are extremely insecure people. And that's why they are so concentrated about themselves and so obsessed with themselves. And it swings from one side to the other, in the sense that it swings from people being extremely private or trying, on the opposite, talking always about themselves. It's not because they want to talk about themselves, it's paradoxically because they want to avoid the subject falling in the hands of the person who is talking to. And this is possibly also the main reason why, like now, I could talk for hours trying to avoid people asking questions. So, yeah, I mean, I find this, the idea of finding myself up there terrifying. It's going to be a long hour. And again, it's I'm mainly doing it for myself. The only thing I usually feel comfortable with and 100% in control, if not, it's not really invulnerable, is when I'm behind the camera, because again, it gives me this sense of control. I see what I want to see and I capture what I want to capture. And this is why I'll go up there with my cameras, trying to be distracted. Let's see how it goes.
So what exactly will you be doing with your cameras on the plane?
Well, I have three different cameras. I have a toy camera, I have two reflexes, different lenses and characteristics, and I've got a tripod as well, different films and a notebook. So what I'll try to do as well is I'll try to do a number of experiments. I've got also films with different speeds. I don't have digital, I'm afraid. I'm a very old-fashioned person and I like to print, so that's the reason why I'm still, you know, into the analogic world. So yes, also depending on the light, natural light and artificial light, I think I'll try to see a few things. It also depends on what's around me, and so there is not something you can, I'd rather to improvise, so there is not something you can really plan, so we'll see.
So you said that you came to England for a year,
mm-hmm.
but you found you couldn't leave. What did you come to England for? What was your reason for coming?
Well, initially, the official, there is an official and unofficial, and on the unofficial, there is a limited. I'm not gonna say that much, but the official is, which is also in a very important, you know, part of the real reason why I'm here, is that I was here just to study. I was into my graduate studies, and I had been admitted to a prestigious school here, and I said, okay, I really wanna go. And while the experience was, once on a lifetime in terms of, not only in terms of academic experience, but also in terms of personal experience because of the people I met, and it was very hard, very, very, very hard. But it's one of those experiences that no doubt I would do it again, despite of all the pain that I had to go through during the exam period. And at the end of the exam, I just felt like at ease. I think a great thing about London is that it's a cozy environment, in the sense that it's such a melting pot of cultures that you can easily find at ease, and you can easily find your place here. So just joining the town is always easy, living is possibly less easy, and that's maybe why I find myself trapped. It goes in waves, my relationship with London, in the sense that at times I love it, at times I absolutely hate it. But I think it's part of any relationship, really. So,
what were you studying?
I was studying economics at the London School of Economics, not that far away from here. Actually, I was living in Little Venice back in the day, so I always used to take the tube until the embankment, used to drop me in embankment, so coming up on Trafalgar Square and then walking to the school. So Trafalgar Square is probably one of the places especially during my first year, I felt most like it was part of my daily routine. So.
And how has your career gone since then?
Well, totally unexpectedly, again, officially, I at some point I left academia. I always want to work in academia, and it's not a mystery, or it makes sense if you think that I've always been, especially when I was a kid, somebody extremely shy and insecure. So I've always thought that education and study, it was something that could have made you stronger. I mean, it's the power of knowledge in the end. So I studied and kept on studying. And within the field I was studying, I was always going for the more theoretical and approach. So the hardcore stuff that it was even more difficult to get. Again, just because I thought it would make me more secure about everything. But it, at some point, the old scheme collapsed, because I also had some reasonable passion in what I was doing, and it became almost a slavery, because I was never happy and never satisfied of the quality of my work, of my understanding of things. It felt like I could always had a better idea, or I could have, even when I was teaching, I could have explained the idea in a more intuitive way. I don't know, it was really frustrating at some point. And in order to, it was really for my personal equilibrium at some point, is that I said, okay, fine, I'm not gonna find myself a job this time. Let's try the private sector, which I had ruled out at the very beginning. And let's try to find a normal job. Again, another paradox. Yeah, I live of alibis and paradoxes. I ended up working in banking, and I mean investment banking, and I mean 14 hours a day. How normal is that? And my family really didn't know what investment bank was all about. They still don't, likely for them. But my friends, especially my friends from school who saw me also, you know, at university, they were really surprised for somebody with my character or background to go into banking. I said, why are you doing that? And really, the reality is that the only thing I could say is that why not? It was, again, something was telling me, okay, do it. So that, yes, it's something you reasonably find interesting, obviously. You do it diligently, you do it responsibly. And it's a job. A job needs to have some kind of component on sacrifice associated to that. It comes from my family, I suspect. And but this time you can enjoy your free time, which is tiny, but that it can be 100% dedicated to you. While when I was in academia, I felt like it was more of a mission, so there was really no free time at all. I could really enjoy. Again, problem and issues with personal balance, I suspect. So I bet if you ask my closest friend, they said, yeah, she's going to join banking in 1 or 2 years, she's going to drop off. And 9 years down the line, I'm still there, still in the same institutions. Despite credit crunch, despite all the horrible things that happened last year, and despite being part of a system that it has made, you know, a number of abuses. But again, I'm not here to defend, you know, the banking system, but there are also, you know, people that I know that have worked responsibly, and they're, you know, it's easy then to attack, you know, then to, but say I'm still there.
Mentioned the credit crunch, it's a very current top conversation.
Oh my gosh, yes.
How has that affected your work?
Massively, especially last year, it was really bad. And again, the banking itself, it's almost like a microcosmos. It's like, you know, a circle of people. It's not self-contained, it has a lot of interaction with the other sectors, but yes, once you're in the circle, you talk banking, you see bank people from banking, it's difficult, you know, to get out of the circle. Last year especially, well, everything started at the end of end of summer 2007, really. But the biggest impact, well, we saw it last, starting summer, the fall was awful, the winter even worse. And again, if it's difficult for me to describe the intensity of those days. I assume it also depends on how sensitive you are and how you live things, but for more than 3 months in a row, I used to wake up with nausea and, you know, being sick, really being physically sick. And then, you know, if only I could have stepped up. I mean, I was telling it to myself every day, but it simply didn't work. It was simple, the atmosphere and the pressure there that was beyond belief. And then for what reason? What was the worst that could happen? Simply my job, maybe a liberation. I, you know, but just because you were there, and it was really heavy, really heavy. And again, I perfectly know there are more important things in life, believe me. And I used to say it to myself every day, it simply didn't work. It was the context to make it, you know, worse. And then it probably didn't have to be so bad. It's just because, as usual, men are stupid, and they're all, you know, they all feel strong and courageous when things go bad, and, you know, they are the first to run away and escape as soon as, you know, there is a little bit of commitment to show. But that's history, I guess.
It's You mentioned the more important things in life. What are the more important things in life for you?
I come from a very traditional family. I've been very conservative and traditional upbringings. So it's really about respect, honesty, and family, where family is with the big F. Well, I come from Sicily, so the concept of family is notoriously is notoriously an important one. But I don't really make distinction between family when there is, you know, a blood relationship, or, you know, close friends. Actually, there are people in my family that don't really consider family, and close friends that are. But I would really be no one without the people around me. I think that's the most important thing.
You said what little time you get off. How do you spend the time when you're not at work?
Okay, I'm a sport addict, and I do that in order to de-stress and to keep myself artificially happy. and it's a good way to balance, I think. But aside that, there is a little artist in me as well, like in anybody, and pictures to me are possibly the best way I manage to communicate each of us as a way they prefer and they feel most comfortable with. It might be, I don't know, dance, it can be singing, it can be drawing, painting. To me it's really see things through a lens. So you can make me feel rescued. And I know you're going to take pictures of me, and again, this is probably more terrifying to me than the plint, and I hope I will never be able to see these pictures, because it makes me really uncomfortable. Yes, to me it's pictures and beauty in general. I love being surrounded by beauty, and London is great for that. And any form of art, really, it's something I'm always. I like to be provoked. I like to feel something. Again, where I'm really frustrated or disappointed, or where I get depressed, where I don't feel anything. And at times it might happen, especially when you have period where, for whatever reason, you suffer because somebody has done something. It can be in any kind of, I'm not talking only about love or people disappoint you or deceit you, and the tendency to survive is just, okay, isolate yourself and feel nothing. So feel nothing is better than feel bad. For me, feeling nothing is really something I want to avoid, because if I feel nothing, then like I'm freezed. And so finding stimulus around you that just like remind you're alive, it's
so you most have briefly mentioned your childhood in Sicily. Would mm-hmm. you like to tell me a bit more about that?
I get loving and lovely parents. I think, you know, my father is probably one of the most honest people I've ever met in my life. My mom is one of the most delicate people I met in her life. But both human beings, both unresolved, with their own issues. And despite them, you know, obviously not trying to have their own issues, you know, influencing, you know, the kids. I've got a brother. I thought he did. And just to give you an idea, my parents, I don't know if this has something to do with Sicily anyway, but they're obsessed with security. It's like the world is evil, and you can hardly ever trust anybody, and this has had a big role in the fact that I'm so insecure about anything and everything. And this is probably the main reason why when I came to major age at 18, as soon as I had the chance, I left, which is pretty unusual in Italy. I mean, in Italy, you still see people, you know, living with parents until their 30s. They never say, they only leave majority, they only leave home when they get married. which I know it's really unusual for this country. But as soon as I had the chance, I had to leave because I had to prove that I can do it by myself. I wanted also, you know, to test myself just to see if the world is really so evil and do things that were supposed to be completely inconsiderate in their eyes, but they were utterly normal. And that's probably also the root, but the original, yes, reason why I'm here today. I told my parents, so I joined this project, and they think I'm totally mad, but the reality is that they will probably watch me via the web, which again I found really surprising, because it's another paradox. You think I'm doing something silly, but then you're gonna watch me and you're probably gonna feel proud about it, and you're probably gonna tell all your friends that I'm up there, and thank God it's so early in the morning, otherwise it would be a disaster.
How do you think your childhood would have differed had you grown up in the UK?
We have to talk about averages, and averages are meaningful and not that meaningful at the same time. But I don't know, it feels like, for again, the interaction I had, and I can't turn back time, so I don't know what it was, you know, in the 70s, but it feels like people are a little bit more relaxed. A little bit more open. So yes, I probably would have had less infrastructure in my head.
Okay, bringing us back to the plinth, mm-hmm. What do you hope to gain from this experience?
I think that if I managed to find even one single minute out of 1 hour when I'm really at ease, when I don't worry about how I look, about what people think, about what I'm doing, that's going to be a huge goal, personal goal for me. As soon as I got the call a couple of days ago, I instantly say, okay, I can't do it. If I'm coming, I have to think about it, and then I hang up and I said, oh my God, now I have to do something interesting, I have to prove, and you feel the pressure. And I said, okay, now this is going horribly wrong. I'm not going to do it if I think I have to prove something to anybody, simply because it's inappropriate. It would have made my last 48 hours hell. And chances are I would have probably disappointed myself anyway. So I think that doing this micro project rather than a macro project is the best I can do.
Yeah. Have you got anything else you'd like to add?
Just that I'm really happy in the end, you know, to be part of this experience. I don't know how many initiatives like this are actually out there across the globe, but it's great to be part of this project here today, and in London in particular. It really means a lot to me, and and if I just look back and I see when I came in from and what brought me here, it might make no sense to whoever listened to this tape, I mean, but it makes perfect sense to me, and it seems like it came at the right time. I see it as, you know, it's part of a path. So let's see what happened next, and 10 minutes and I'm up there, so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.